Eight down, eight to go. That's what the Warriors, that's where the Warriors are at. They've won the first eight games they had to win. If they win eight more, they are your 2022 world champions. It's that simple. If you watch this show, if you listen to this show, I've been telling you since I started hosting this show in November that A, the Warriors are easily the favorites in the world championship. B, the Phoenix Suns have no chance. And you're just going to continue getting those expert, accurate opinions. And we're going to throw a lot of data at you, too, because we're going to do two things on today's show. Kevin Dana, the voice of the Santa Cruz Warriors, he's also sometimes the voice of the Golden State Warriors, is going to join me. We're going to, A, break down what is, in my opinion, one of the biggest victories in this franchise's history. I'm going back to Friday night, game six of the Warriors' win over the Memphis Grizzlies, and I'll tell you why it was so big. And two, we're going to preview the Dallas Mavericks. Kevin, the Warriors have home court advantage for the rest of the playoffs. I'm giddy. I'm optimistic. I'm pumped. There's a lot to cover, and we're going to do that right here. This is Locked On Warriors.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get podcasts. We'd like to thank today's sponsor of Locked On Warriors, Sakara Nutrition. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish. Go to Sakara.com/LockedOn20 or enter the code LockedOn20 for 20% off at checkout. You can follow Kevin Dana, the voice of the Santa Cruz Warriors, and sometimes the voice of the Golden State Warriors, on Twitter at Kevo408. You can follow me, Cyrus Otzes, on Twitter at Dog Surf Roadshow, where I hope I entertain Dub Nation and then some with the content I produce. I want to start the show by talking about Friday's incredible victory, Kevin. I'm going to play one amazing soundbite from Steve Kerr talking about what his Friday night was while he was in health and safety protocols, simply because I think the way he described his marriage is what a lot of us can relate to. Let's start with you, Kevin. What was your Friday night like? Where did you watch it? What were your feelings? What did you take away from that incredible home victory, a 14-point victory by the Golden State Warriors?
Well, first off, Cyrus, it's great to be on with you. I know some fans are going to be upset that this isn't Locked On MSNBC with the hot political jokes. I'll try to keep
one
those
person,
to
yeah.
a minute. Yeah, no, I was just messing. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But Friday, I was actually doing radio stats for Eric Hasseltine, Grizzlies radio play-by-play. Provides a very entertaining broadcast. He and Michael Wallace do a great job. So I was getting the other side of the story. I was there at Chase. I was hearing the Memphis call. It was a really good call and a very passionate call. But when it was 102-92 and I could kind of sense that the game was going to end, I took off one earphone after like the second offensive rebound from Kevon Looney. I'm like, I want to hear how the crowd reacts when this three eventually goes in. Because I felt it coming. I felt the knockout punch coming. I'm like, I want to hear this. And sure enough, Klay Thompson drills that left wing three. Game over. Series over. And, Oracle. It's Chase Center brought it. It sounded like Oracle.
I can understand your mistake. The crowd did bring it. Bravo, Chase Center. Bravo. Bravo. Yeah. I cannot say that enough. They brought it, sir. Continue on, please.
Yeah. So, like, it was just one of those moments. I'm like, I want to feel this experience. And it was glorious. Kevon Looney, my oh my. I know we're going to kind of get into the nuts and bolts of the game, but that was the first thing I thought about. Where 5 years ago, after his second year in the NBA, and he had piled up so many injuries, I'm like, is this guy going to be able to last in the NBA? Like, I liked him. I liked him off the court. I thought he had shown some nice stuff in the G League. Had an 18-point, 20-rebound game, you know, just a few months prior with Santa Cruz. I'm like, yeah, this guy can play, but is he going to be able to stay healthy enough to stick in the NBA?
Mm-hmm.
And he has, and then some. He went from a guy who was injured a lot to playing 82 games in the regular season, starting 80 of them, and then getting reinserted back into the starting lineup for game six and getting 22 rebounds, 11 offensive against one of the best rebounding teams in the NBA. I mean, 70 to 44 rebounding edge, 25 offensive rebounds. I mean, and most of that was Looney. Bravo to Kevon Looney.
Absolutely, man. I, dude, it's incredible. I mean, Gary Payton II was talking about give the man a raise, and he's earned it. He is a free agent after this season, so let's hope that he's a part of this team beyond this season. But, I mean, back in January, I asked Steve Kerr at a press conference if they're going to contemplate making a roster decision to fortify the center position simply because at that point it was determined we have no idea if James Wiseman is going to play again. And Kevon Looney is not a natural center. I mean, when he was drafted, he was more like a small forward. People were kind of envisioning him being like a Kevin Durant type almost before all these injuries have hobbled him a bit, and he's really redefined his game. Steve Kerr, I bow to you, sir, because in that press conference, you said you contradicted me. He said, well, I would actually like to push back and say that Kevon Looney is a center on this team. He is. I bow down. He is. It's incredible his transformation from what he was to where he is now, because the Warriors don't need a center at this point, Kevin. And for 22 rebounds to be pulled down, 11 offensively, to be big manning Steven Adams, to be big manning a Memphis team that, in my opinion, and I think it's safe to say this, was the biggest team in the NBA. They were the number one offensive rebounding team. I don't know if they were the number one overall rebounding team, but they're a big stack team who did not give up rebounds. And in five of those six games, they out-rebounded the Memphis Grizzlies, capitulating with Kevon Looney's 22 rebound performance. It was incredible. So great job starting off with Kevon, man, and giving him the love. By the way, I would think Scott Van Pelt and some of the ESPN folks, I forgot who was calling the play-by-play, would know how to pronounce his first name. I'm hearing Kevin. I'm hearing Kevon. Scott Van Pelt, I love him. I would think he would know how to pronounce Kevon Looney's name by now. So come on, get it right, gentlemen. Anyways, go on.
Here's the thing: like, you would think that people would know how to pronounce other people's names, especially like rotation players in the NBA. Like, those pronunciation mistakes happen more than you think. Like, how many times have I heard Davis Bertans instead of Davis Bertans? Like, it happens. And like, you know, especially for a guy who played on the, you know, who was on the Dynasty Warriors, Kevon Looney. Like, this isn't his first year with the team. Like, he was a big part of a team that won the 2018 NBA title. Now, he didn't have as big of a role in 2017, but 2018, he was a pretty big piece of that team.
Yep.
He was a pretty big piece of the team that went to the NBA Finals in 2019 as well. Like, you would have thought.
I believe he was on that 16 team, wasn't he? Like, wasn't he a rookie that year?
He was, but he played five games in the regular season. Like,
okay,
he was a number 30 pick, like, wasn't in the rotation. But, like, Kevon Looney was, like, a rotation dude in 2018 and 2019. I mean, he's a seventh-year NBA player. So, yeah, it's strange, but, like, people do make a lot of pronunciation mistakes. And it's interesting to kind of hear that. Like, from, like, you know, national people, you would think, like, that's the first thing you would want to – you would double – I double-check everything. Like, Joel Embiid. I've heard Joel Embiid, and it's like, I want to make sure it's Joel – like, if I'm going on a broadcast and I'm going to say his name – I'm double checking, like, all right, I'm making sure it's Joel, right? And like, even people, they interchange Bam Adebayo and Adebayo. Like, is it Adebayo? Is it Adebayo? And you hear both, and it's like, we gotta.
It's Adebayo, right? I don't know.
I've heard both.
yeah, so you don't know even for sure. Okay.
I would pronounce it Adebayo.
Adebayo. Okay.
But I've heard Adebayo.
Interesting.
And like, I actually did do a Heat game once,
yeah.
But that was a year and a half ago. So like, I kind of forget what, like, and I also like found out 3 hours before the broadcast I was doing the game. So I didn't really have time to check that kind of stuff. But like, anyways, that is a long tangent on how like us as media don't do a good job of pronouncing people's names. Like, if I could pronounce the word pronounce, that would be very nice. Arike Ogunbowale.
How many times there you go.
People messed up her name? She's a WNBA star. Like, over and over again, this stuff just happens. Anyways, There was no, it's going to lead me into an actual basketball point. I just completely went off the rails. What?
No, you're fine, man. And look, let's pay some bills real quick before we continue hearing your thoughts on this, because I don't want to limit the show. We normally try to keep it to 30 minutes. We oftentimes push the envelope, and I hear grief, rightfully so, for that. But the Warriors are in the Western Conference Finals now. We need to just give the people what they want and need. So if we got to go late, so be it. I don't want to finish up with the Grizzlies talk yet, just because that was such a war. I mean, that was, and I cannot emphasize enough that the Warriors just beat the second best team in the postseason after themselves. This Grizzlies team was their biggest test. The Celtics make me a little nervous. I could see that being a tough series, but I still think the Grizzlies are superior. And we'll cover all that and then some. But first, I got to give love to actually a new sponsor of Locked On Warriors. And that is Sakara. You heard me mention their name at the beginning. And look, feeling your best starts with what you eat. And Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it with delicious, plant-rich, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in the best body. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. They give you the tools you need to transform your life with their organic, ready-to-eat meal delivery program and functional wellness essentials. And again, they're nutritionally designed, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners are made with powerful plant-rich ingredients. They help boost your energy. They support your digestive system. They curb your sugar cravings. As I mentioned with other sponsors of this program, sugar is horrible for you. The less sugar you consume, the better your body's going to be. And it gets your skin glowing. Plus, it's all delivered right to your door, ready to eat. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to Sakara.com/lockedon20. Or you go to Sakara.com and enter the code LOCKEDON20 at checkout. That's right. The Sakara, Sakara.com/lockedon20 to get 20% off your first order. Again, that's Sakara.com/lockedon20.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. Make sure to go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board. Host Rafael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and the author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, big boards. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. So is Kevin Dana on Twitter. He's free and available by just following him at Kevo408. There's so much going on in that game. Game six, Clay, it has become incredible that has become something you could honestly rely on. He talked about how, you know, he's aware of it, but he doesn't feel the pressure. It's just a natural thing. Stephen Curry was Stephen Curry, stepping up when it matters most. He did a struggle at the start of the game, finished though with a solid stat line, finished with 29 points, on 10 of 27 shooting. What else stuck out to you in that game? I mean, it was a short 8-man rotation. When the news that Otto Porter Jr. was not going to play came out, I was in a doom and gloom scenario mentally. I wasn't sure that they could overcome that. We saw 8 minutes of Nemanja Bjelica, which really excited me because he seems to always produce when he's out there. Damian Lee got 10 minutes, but mostly it was just that core five and the pool party. Well, what else stuck out to you from that game?
The thing that really stuck out to me, well, two things. One, with respect to Steph Curry, since you mentioned him coming up big, I don't understand, and I know I am playing into Skip Bayless's hands right now, and he has won by me bringing this up, but Steph Curry averaged 9.4 points per fourth quarter in that series. And we always hear about how unclutch Stephen Curry is, and I just don't understand where it comes from because, all right, he misses a three that would have won Game 6 of the 2019 NBA Finals, or he missed a game-tying three in Game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals. There's like two shots of his career that has spanned five figures worth of shots. Yeah. Anyways, he's had so many big – I mean, the 8 free throws down the stretch of Game 4, But obviously, that's just this series and the 9.4 points for fourth quarter in this series. But Andrew Wiggins really stood out to me. His fourth quarter, 10 points, 4 rebounds, 4 of 5 from the field, hit both of his threes. And he hit the three that put him ahead for good. Back when, I mean, the final score was 110-96. But that was a nip and tuck game through the first 43 minutes of it. 43, 44 minutes of that game. And Andrew Wiggins, I mean, this is a guy who's had a narrative, fair or unfair, about his career of not being a winner. Well, Andrew Wiggins has played nothing but winning basketball all postseason long, and it really showed in that fourth quarter. I mean, 11 rebounds in that game overall, another double-double. He's averaging 7 rebounds per game in the postseason, just about. I think it's 6.9 for a guy who has a career average of around 4.5 rebounds a game. That's a significant upgrade. It's like he's, you know, rebounding at a 50% plus rate that he normally does, 50% better, a little bit better than that. And so his fourth quarter, I remember looking up his fourth quarter stats and being like, whoa, all right, this is serious stuff.
Absolutely. And just to, I'm totally with you for the Skip Bayless's and other haters of the world. Again, the national media, just for some reason, the respect is not there still for these Golden State Warriors. Even George Karl, former head coach, former coach of the year, former Warriors head coach in the 80s, who's been a guest of this program. You know, I asked him because, you know, he picked the Grizzlies to win. And then he came out and said, it's a wide open playoffs now, wide open. And I responded to him like, coach, I'm like, why are you acting like the majority of this ignoramus national media who continues to just pretend that that 2015 to 2020 run just never happened? Or 2019, I'm sorry, whatever. You know, like Steph, Dre, and Klay are still in their prime. They're not old yet. They don't have a considerable amount of mileage on those tires either, given they didn't come out of college until their third or fourth years. I do not understand this utter lack of respect from so many people in the national media. This the Skip Bayless thing, the only thing I could attribute to that is that he has such an incredibly picky standard of greatness. And I think what he wants from Steph is a finals MVP. I think to him, if you're not Michael Jordan, you're just not great. I've never really heard him rave about anyone other than Michael Jordan. So I do think if Steph wins that finals MVP, and I had to push back against my friend Larry Kruger. I go on his show after every post game because him and many others thought Chris Paul's legacy was going to trump Stephen Curry's pursuit for a fourth for his first finals MVP. And I'm like, are you kidding me? First of all, what does that have to do with the product on the court? Just because someone wants to fix their legacy isn't going to change a thing on the damn court. But this is what I've been hearing. And there's and then the drama, though, carried over after the game. And I want to play this sound, but there's a lot of sound I'm going to play on today's show. The first thing is going to be Draymond Green in the post-game presser when he decided to clap back at someone that you love. You've said this before, I respect it. Yeah, and that's Big Kendrick Perkins. And Draymond came up with a whole new nickname for him. For those watching on the YouTube feed, you have to particularly love Draymond Jr. This kid is adorable. I love him. But obviously, if you're listening on the podcast, you're going to hear what Draymond says, and it's right here.
Something came to my phone earlier. A guy saying I'm scared to shoot the basketball. Scared and me in the same senses is like brutal, you know. But you got a big ogre on TV talking about what Draymond say ain't the gospel. It is the gospel. What I say is the gospel. And, you know, when you say that multiple times, like on several different segments, you must think what I say the gospel. So, you know, you got to come out and shut some guys up sometimes. And you know, I like to show, you know, when you got people out there just talking out the side of their neck, you know, or anybody can make the pass Draymond make, like, that's just stupid. I mean, like, these are people who get employed to talk on TV about our game. And, you know, it's anybody can make that pass. You make that pass. We would love to see it. I played against the guy, by the way. I'm talking about Kendrick Perkins, for those of y'all that don't know. I'm never ducking no smoke. As the Memphis Grizzly towels say, I don't duck smoke. Anybody can make that pass. Like, you couldn't. So, good luck. So, you know, you just got to come out and shut people up sometimes. And, It was very fun to do.
Oh, that was just music to my ears, that whole clip. I want to tell people some of this, too. I've been kind of shying away from this, but might as well say it now. I've had multiple sources, and I'm putting my credibility on the line, and I stand by my credibility. There's a reason why I call myself an award-winning journalist. I've only won one award, but I'm proud of my work. I had to go to Mexico, spent 4 months on this investigative piece, and again, I will put my credibility on the line in saying this. I've had sources, both former and current, employed by ESPN, working at Bristol, Connecticut, who have told me, and there's a lot of people who have told me that there is a crisis of leadership there, and it's been going on for years. And the fundamental issue that these individuals have is the leadership there in picking who is the voice of the NBA going on these telecasts, to a much lesser extent, writing articles as well. But this is primarily focused on the TV side. And they just don't understand it. And two names that have stuck out in talking with these individuals, Kendrick Perkins being one of them, Jay Williams being another. Why are we giving so much credence to individuals like these who don't know anything when it comes to basketball? I mean, they're literally buffoons. And I cannot thank Draymond Green enough for bringing up that big ogre thing, because now I can call Kendrick Perkins a big ogre all day. What are your thoughts on Draymond's comments, Kevin?
All right. Well, first off, I don't think Draymond was wrong in anything he said. I was very entertained by his, and he has every right to say everything he wants to say. I would push back on saying Jay Williams and Kendrick Perkins don't know anything about basketball. Like
very little. I'm adding hyperbole to this. Look, point is, you could find much better people than them too. Much better. Go on, sir.
I agree on that part. I agree on that part. I wouldn't say that they are buffoons and that they don't know anything about basketball. Jay Williams is, at times it sounds like he is trying to get ratings. Like when he said that Duke could beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, which it was the Duke team that had Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, that team could beat Cleveland. No, they couldn't. Like, come on, the Cavaliers are an NBA team. No college basketball team is going to beat an NBA team. No college basketball team is going to beat a G League team. That's not happening. They are professionals and college kids. Well, all right, maybe not amateurs anymore. But if you want to get into that argument, that's for Locked On NCAA podcast. I think he knows what he's doing.
To tell you real quick, I got very specific attributions regarding Jay Williams. Two people with him told me is that why someone who had no success in the NBA suddenly one of your main NBA guys? I mean, it is true. He was the former number two pick, but he never really did anything. I think he had a motorcycle injury, I believe. Yeah, but something injury wise derailed his career. And then what came to my attention, this was years ago. I remember he was criticizing the Warriors, and he's always been a Warriors hater. But I remember him saying, like, the Warriors don't even have a defensive focus, and they don't even have a coach who understands defense. And I'm like, Ron Adams doesn't know defense? Like, are you out of your mind? And then he had to correct himself. It's like he just – I use that buffoon label because he doesn't do his research. He goes on there and just espouses opinions with oftentimes incorrect facts or no evidence to support it. He got in trouble with Kevin Durant for saying, you know, putting words in Kevin Durant's mouth that he contradicted. And yet ESPN continues paying this man. And Perkins, I think the Lakers are going to win 70 games. That was his prediction. And now you're employing him. I don't get it, man. That's why I use that word buffoon, because they say dumb shit. And that's the last time I'll swear on this show. I promise. Go ahead, please.
I will just say, and I'm not trying to bow down to anyone, but anyone who played in the NBA knows a lot more basketball than I do. Okay. Yeah. I could watch the game. I've watched the game my whole life, but I'm not an NBA player. I'm not a former NBA player. And yeah, I will disagree wholeheartedly with a lot of their opinions. Just because I feel like I'm right on one thing doesn't mean that I know more than those guys. And so I'll disagree with Jay Williams a lot, and I'll disagree with Kendrick Perkins sometimes, but I will have fun in listening to Kendrick Perkins make his argument. But they are still former NBA players, and they are smart enough to get themselves on TV, and they're smart enough to make millions doing what they do. So they know something I don't.
And my only pushback to that, Kevin, is What I've learned in over 20 years of working in this media game is just because someone gets a job doesn't mean they're right for the job. There's someone who's hiring them, and that person oftentimes should not be in that position. And there's a lot of those. And that's where I really love the expansion of media where, look, literally anyone can create their own show. There's positives and negatives with that. But at least the good voices are no longer muted because of these gatekeepers. I got to give love to Built Bars just because they're a sponsor of the show and they make tasty treats. I got to send you a packet. My mom, by the way, who watches this show religiously, and she's on Twitter always giving me love, even though she's hiding. It's cute. It's thank you, Mom. She sent me a Built Bar birthday cake package, which is like Built Bars that have like a birthday cake flavor. I haven't tried them yet, but Mom, thank you. And Built Bars make those. They make birthday cake puffs. And you're like, imagine dipping your fingers in that plastic tub of birthday cake frosting. One of my all-time favorites. Do you like that whole cake batter?
Love birthday cake batter. Yes, please.
Delicious. And then look, they make those. They make all sorts of flavors. And the beautiful part is that despite the fact that they taste good, despite the fact that they pack a 17 gram of protein punch. They're covered in 100% real chocolate. They only have 4 grams of sugar on average per bar. They only have 130 calories on average per bar. They have found an incredible recipe to give you a great tasting protein bar that is mostly healthy for you, especially when you compare it to almost everything else you put in your body that will make you feel full in the process, because that's always my biggest struggle. And again, all you got to do, just go to built.com, get those birthday cake puffs right now, or any other flavor you want. Go to built.com, use the promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. Again, use the promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. You can follow Kevin Dana on Twitter at Kevo408. No guilt by association, people, all right? My opinions are my opinions only. I just don't want to get Kevin in trouble for anything I say.
I love the back and forth, Cyrus. I can do this all day.
I love it too, bro. I love you, brother. I want to play one more soundbite just because before we begin moving on from the Grizzlies and start talking about the Mavericks. Steve Kerr was not there, and this was yet another Mike Brown production. Congratulations, coach. You're now 13-1 in the postseason, leading the Golden State Warriors. But Steve Kerr is finally back. He held a press conference, I believe, yesterday, and he talked about his experience watching the game. And I have to play this because I can be completely psychotic watching games, especially big games like this. I'm screaming. I mean, I don't know what my neighbors think of me. And my wife, God bless her soul, you know, I love this woman dearly. Erin, you know, her and I, we've been together for almost 7 years, known each other since 20. We met in college, and even we dated back then, but it just wasn't right then. And we reconnected, and now we're together. And so even she knows me so well that she decided to leave the house. She never admitted this was the reason, but I'm pretty sure she knows me enough to know. She left the house to hang out with her best friend Friday. And it was a relief because I was screaming at Dylan Brooks. I was screaming at everybody and everything. I was screaming at a television station that is not that is an inanimate object. And seeing Steve Kerr's comments made me feel a little sane, a little normal. This was Steve Kerr talking about his experience watching Friday night's Warriors game.
Yeah, she sat there for about 2 minutes and then announced that she was going to head downstairs to watch the Kardashians instead. So it was a good arrangement. We were, you know, like all good marriages, you know when to be together and when to give each other a little space. So all is good now, though.
Were you yelling?
Perhaps.
Okay.
I love that. I relate it. Thank you, Steve Kerr, for making me feel normal. Any last thoughts about the Grizzlies series before we move on? You're probably going to disagree with me with this, maybe not, but would you agree that the Grizzlies were the toughest remaining out for the Warriors and that there isn't going to be another level of competition that's going to match them?
I mean, we'll see, but like, I agree that like, I thought that the grit, Well, I thought the Suns would be the toughest, but we're going to get into that in a little bit. And I was wrong and you were right. But I did think like that the Grizzlies would be tougher than anybody that Golden State would potentially face if they made it to the NBA Finals. And I do think Boston is really, really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
I'm with you about Boston.
Memphis was going to be scrappier and tougher to beat.
I am so happy that I would not care so much about Dylan Brooks, and I would not care so much about that team if I did not respect them. All right, so keep that in mind. They were a tough out. They are a tough team, and it's impossible for me to sit here and disagree with anyone who says that they're not going to be a threat in the near future. They're going to be a threat for many years to come, but so are the Warriors. Now we are moving on to the Dallas Mavericks, and look, I did not predict that the Mavericks would beat the Suns. I thought the Warriors would have beaten the Suns in five games, maybe six, because they didn't have home court. But we're not going to talk about that now because the Suns lost. And that led to a lot of fascinating content today. We're going to talk about that Mavericks matchup in just a moment, but there's some sound to play. What do you want to start with? Do you want to start with Anthony Edwards first, or do you want to start with let's start with Anthony Edwards. Let's go from Anthony Edwards to the more really juicy stuff. This was Anthony Edwards, a shooting guard of the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think it's safe to say he's going to be a future star in this game. He was on his Instagram story making some pretty lascivious comments following the game, and here they are.
I remember when we were playing Phoenix, they were talking so much shit, telling us we better make the playoffs. We ain't gonna make the playoffs. We out of the playoffs, but y'all, this is a disgrace, bro. Like, y'all got points in the third quarter. This is terrible. I remember when we were playing.
Sorry, there he goes. I was on loop. Yeah, so there he is talking smack. He talks about how he's never experienced more S-bomb talking from a team than the Phoenix Suns. And then we'll piggyback these two, and I'll let you have the floor. And then this morning, we had Patrick Beverley, a player who may be unintentionally, maybe intentionally, auditioning for a roster spot on the Warriors next year. I don't know what his contract status is right now. But he was dropping some, what I would call truth bombs, especially on ESPN's Morning National Programs. He was on Get Up. He was on First Take. You could see J.J. Redick squirming a little bit because, you know, J.J. Redick loves Chris Paul. But Patrick Beverley was making some very direct comments about the Phoenix Suns, and more specifically about Chris Paul. And we'll get into this. So here is Patrick Beverley.
The weather, man. I'm just giving you, letting you know if it's raining or not, brother.
Yeah.
These are other, I'm not the only one who says this. It's other people, man. What? If I'm playing a game and I'm getting ready for the Phoenix Suns, come on, let's go. If I'm getting a game and I'm getting ready for the Golden State Warriors, yeah, I'll holler at y'all tomorrow. I got an early one. I'm just saying, my preparation is very different.
I see.
That's all.
And that's because of Steph and Clay and all of that.
Steph. Yeah.
So people will look at Steph and Chris Paul and say they are the two preeminent players of their generation at their position. Do you compare the two of them?
No, you can't compare them. Very different players, but I agree with you what you said.
That they would be the two preeminent guys of their position.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to put any words in your mouth. I feel like you're saying that Chris Paul is overrated, that people view him in a way, but you haven't used that word, so I don't want to put it in your mouth. But is that what you're saying, that people generally overrate how great a player he is?
I think he's been in a fortunate situation to be, president of NBPA and State Farm commercials. So he's fortunate to get certain calls and games that normal guys don't usually get. I'll say that.
And that's a big thing to say, because I've been making the case on this show for a long time that there is an incredible double standard that officials levy on Draymond Green versus Chris Paul. Just in the Pelican series, we saw Chris Paul kick Alvarado in the nuts, and then elbow him in the next game in the face. And he did get a flagrant one retroactively for the nut kick. All they did was the 2-minute report revealed that they made a mistake in not calling the foul on the elbow to the face of Alvarado. But again, Chris Paul, all you got to do is go to YouTube. The evidence is overwhelming. He routinely, just last year in the NBA Finals, there was a play where Giannis was going up and he just pushed him. Could have caused in air. It could have caused severe injury to him. Meanwhile, Draymond Green, his hand gets caught in what's his name? I forgot his name. Bane or
Brandon Clark's jersey.
Brandon Clark, thank you. And Brandon Clark's jersey nicks him in the face, causes no injury, catches him before he falls, and suddenly he's the devil reincarnated. Like, he gets a flagrant two, and everyone's looking at Draymond Green. When the reality is, and this is my issue with the officials, is that you're supposed to be approaching these games objectively. You're not supposed to come in with reputations as something to regard when you're making calls. Yet Chris Paul, because he articulates himself clearly, because the State Farm commercials, he's the president of the players union. He's well spoken. He somehow seems to get a pass on a lot of the same things that Draymond Green does. And I'm glad Pat Beverly said that. I agree with everything he said wholeheartedly. I also love the overrated aspect of it. I do think Chris Paul is overrated. I don't understand the worship so many people do. Ryan Russillo of when he comes on with Bill Simmons on Sunday nights, I love that podcast. I do listen to that Sunday night version especially. Sounded like a man whose mother just died it was literally like he was depressed because Chris Paul got eliminated in the semifinals and he was wrong. Floor is yours. What do you think about everything that I just played and I just said?
I will start with reading Chris Paul's resume. He's a 12-time All-Star. He's 7-time first-team All-NBA defensive team. He was a Rookie of the Year, 4-time first-team All-NBA, and he's one of the 75 best players in the history of the NBA according to the panel who voted on that. I don't think he's overrated. I think he's really damn good. Now, I will say that it can be I'll agree with you to the extent with like respect to the foul calls, like the elbow to Alvarado, that came like a 2-point game in the final minute, I want to say, of game six, and like more or less cost the Pelicans the series. Because like Paul got free throws, they made it a 4-point game. That was kind of it. And like when he does the swing through, rip through foul, like I'm annoyed by it. But you know what? It's a smart play. And like Chris Paul knew probably that if he like put that elbow up, like that the foul was going to get called on Alvarado. And like, yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the way the league has been, right? That the guys who are the veterans who have the resumes get all the juice with the officials. Like, that's as old as time. And like plenty of other guys have gotten calls like that, and I can see why people get annoyed by that. I guess I've just kind of resigned to being like, all right, this is how it operates, this is what happens. Stars get calls, aggressive players get calls, that's the way it is. So I mean, I guess I'm not as like infuriated by that stuff, but I will say like the rip through foul is awful. Like annoying. But it's smart because it gets his team. If they're in the bonus, he gets free throws out of it. And if they're not in the bonus, then they get one foul closer to the bonus. So it works. And if it works, why would Chris Paul stop doing it? So, like, if they're going to call the game that way, Chris Paul should absolutely continue to do what he does because it helps his team and it helps his team win games. So, I mean, from that perspective, I think he's doing exactly what he needs to do.
So based off what you're saying, is it fair? So obviously there's levels to this, right? Like the NBA 75 team, for example, it's not like they're all on a level playing field. There's like, you know, tiers. Yeah. Is it safe to say then that Chris Paul is on like a James Harden tier of greatness where, because when you talk about these rip throughs and going to the foul line, that's what I think of first and foremost. I just think James Harden. And then the more I think about it, these are two players that have incredible individual accolades based, you know, all NBA teams, all-star selections, you name it. But the postseason has eluded them in terms of success. Yeah. So would you say that's kind of like where he's at as a in terms of a comparison or as a tier of the level of greatness he's at?
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely think he's closer to James Harden than, say, like Stephen Curry, who's won 3 NBA titles, or Kevin Durant or LeBron James or Michael Jordan. Like, definitely much closer to James Harden than like those guys. And obviously, like, MJ's on one category of his own. LeBron's not far behind, and Steph isn't on that level, but Steph is definitely, I would put above Chris Paul, no question.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. And what were you shocked? I mean, because like I said, I actually never heard you really come out and say the Suns are going to do a lot. I that you're one of the last people I envisioned among the many who were mistaken about the Suns. And most of the mistakes, I think, here's the conclusion I'm kind of coming to. Let me know if you think I'm in reality more, if I'm a little delusional here. I think a lot of national media members and maybe even local media members, they base a lot of their opinions and their judgments on the stat sheet because they can't watch every game, right? So all they can do is just look at highlights. They can look at, you know, the records. They can look at, you know, offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency, obviously, you know, more obvious stats like points and so forth. And so they make these opinions, they form these opinions and judgments based on that. And if you just or mostly base your opinion on the numbers, yeah, the Suns were incredible. They won 64 games this year. They had one of the best teams, both offensively and defensively. You know, on paper, from DeAndre Ayton up to Chris Paul, they seem to be complete. I don't like to judge teams until I see them a lot with my very eyes, right? Because to me, basketball is not like baseball, where you can approach it in a money ball aspect and come to these conclusions based on numbers. It's just I don't think the game is geared that way. I really do think there are great players out there who just don't score that much. There are great players. I'm sorry, and there are overrated players who score a lot but don't make that much of a difference in terms of wins and losses. Wins and losses are what I care about the most, obviously. And do you think that's why the Suns were so revered and why you have people right now just shell-shocked over the fact that the Suns were out in the Western Conference semifinals, when someone like me, again, I base my judgment based on how the Warriors played them in the last two meetings, especially on how the Suns played the Grizzlies toward the end of the season. The Grizzlies thumped them. I mean, that wasn't even close. And then I also, again, you can't really call this a measurable aspect of determining a team or a player, but I heard someone call them a finesse team. And I thought that was very astute. I thought that was a very accurate description of this team. Where were you at? Like, you were going to say the Suns were going to be the toughest remaining out. They're not even there anymore. So why did you like them so much? And are you shell-shocked like everyone else? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I am shell-shocked. And I did revere them. Like, I'll own it. I thought they were going to be a big-time contender to win the NBA championship this year. I would not have been surprised if they won the NBA title at all. And this is kind of playing into what you were saying about stats. The stat, and this was also backed up by, like, when I saw them play close games, they were 33-9 in clutch games this year. That's defined by a 5-point game in the final 5 minutes. And like a lot of playoff games in tight are going to be tight situations, competitive series that are going to come down to 5-point games in the final 5 minutes. And the Suns won in nearly 80% of those games in the regular season. Now, obviously, the regular season is much different from the postseason, but like, that is a huge sample size of getting it done when it's pressure cooking time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, damn, that's a pretty good backbone for a resume to have NBA postseason success, especially since they had a lot of postseason success last year and did a lot of good stuff in crunch time games in the 2021 NBA playoffs. Now, obviously, they blew a 2-0 NBA Finals lead to the Milwaukee Bucks. But you think about the Valley-oop to DeAndre Ayton in Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. You thought about, you know, them just getting to the NBA Finals, Chris Paul's first NBA Finals. They have that experience. They run through the regular season this year. You know, they had the best record by 8 games in the NBA this year. And I mean, only one other team before the Phoenix Suns this year had won as many regular season games and not making the Western the Conference Finals. And that, of course, was the Mavericks that lost to the We Believe Golden State Warriors in 2007. So, yeah, I was shocked by all that because, I mean, especially by the way the first 6 games of the series had gone. Like, the home teams had just dominated. Game 1, the Phoenix won by 7 points. That game was not close. That was a 15-point game, and then Dallas just hit some shots late to make it appear a lot closer. Like, these were beatdowns by the home team. And I just assumed, like, all right, yeah, Dallas thumped them at the end of Game 6. Like, all right, they're just going to come back to Phoenix, and Phoenix is going to win by 15-plus. I told anyone who would listen to me, and it's not a lot of people that will listen to me, but anyone I'm like, all right, Phoenix is going to win by at least 15. I said with all the confidence in the world, like someone who's watched the NBA for the last 25 years, I've seen this a million times. What I saw last night, I have never seen before. I mean, Dallas didn't – I mean, they won by 33. they might, I mean, but that game wasn't even close to 33 points. They were up 46 in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Like, what is going on? I said to myself, what is going on about 20 different times in that game? I was absolutely stunned. And, like, I mean, there have been bigger. There was, like, a 39-point loss by a home team in a Game 7 in, like, the 60s or something. I forget. I read the stat last night. But, like, to me, this is the most shocking thing I've ever seen in a playoff. Like, the number one team in the NBA at Game 7 in the regular season, number one team in the NBA in the regular season, just gets destroyed on their home court. I mean, against the Dallas team that didn't show any life on the road in the previous games in that series. And one other point, you were talking about Phoenix being a finesse team. The word finesse isn't the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of Jay Crowder, Ishmael Wainwright, who's a really strong dude off the bench, or Torrey Craig. Like, they have some guys who I do not consider finesse dudes. Like, guys who will be able to just kind of stand in there. I can see, like, you know, DeAndre Ayton has a lot of finesse to his game, but he's not a punk. You know, like, I don't think he's someone you just kind of, like, smack and, like, he's just going to, like, retreat from the series. He had a terrible game last night. I mean, when I – like, the first sign of that game being over is when DeAndre Ayton had a beautiful, like, wide-open baby hook in the lane, missed it, and then his tap follow right at the rim didn't even go in. I'm like, something's not right with Phoenix tonight. Clay, yeah, those are my thoughts on Game 7 in the Phoenix Suns.
And that Suns organization, I I will say the one colossal mistake I thought they made this regular season was trying that hard in the regular season. I think the Warriors learned that mistake the hard way in 2016 when they pursued that 73-win mark. they messed up. You know, there's only so much energy your physical body has. And Stephen Curry has made attributions to this that I go to time and time and again, because I feel like when he said this earlier this year, he slipped up in admitting it, which is that he sees the season as three parts and he treats each part accordingly. So, and the second part, which, and he never gave specifics on the dates, but you know, just from my own personal research and observation skills, I think it's safe to say the second part is in that January through March area. Right. And that's where he gives the least amount of effort, where he starts preserving his body, where, you know, he's, their entire focus is the postseason. Phoenix never once let off the gas this year. And the whole time I just kept watching this going, why? You just made the NBA finals. You've proven you can get that far. Why not think of the bigger picture here? And I don't know if that's why Chris Paul in his last three games, he gassed out. He played horribly those last three games. I mean, people bring up he turned 37 and just his game went to crap. But I really do believe that, you know, you have only so much energy. And part of the Suns' problem was they went too gung-ho this regular season. And newsflash, they don't give you trophies for having the best record in the regular season. The Warriors learned that the hard way in 2016. And until I talked to Leandro Barbosa about that, it was always like a theory of mine. And then when I finally talked to Leandro last year, I brought that up. I'm like, would you agree that pursuing that mark, that 73 win mark, played a part in it? And he didn't even hesitate. He's like, yes, we made a mistake. We in hindsight, we clearly put too much effort into that, and that taxed us. So we didn't have any reserves left, energy wise, in those last few NBA Finals games. And I think the Suns made a mistake there. They made a huge mistake. And I don't know if DeAndre Ayton comes back. I mean, he's going to be a really restricted free agent. They got some decisions to make there, but nice knowing you, Suns. Out of a dedici. I want to share as we wrap things up here. We got to talk about the Mavericks. Unless you want anything else to jump into anything else. I never want to hijack this show when you're on, Kevin, please. So.
No. Let's talk Dallas or move on to.
Let's do it. And real quick, I want to highlight just, you know, one of the many people out there who ignorantly hate on the Warriors. Today's subject is going to be Andy Glockner. I have no idea who you are, but because you have that blue check mark by your name, you particularly got my attention. And he wrote in his tweet, Golden State is going to get a real test of where its offense is in these final 1 to 2 rounds. No free passes for them anymore. Yeah, because the Grizzlies were a free pass. Dude, like, just if you're going to publish something where you actually pretend at least you know what you're talking about. That is one of the most asinine things I've read. online. The Grizzlies were a insanely hard test. I even think the Nuggets might end up being a harder test than the Mavericks. Sounds crazy, but the Warriors can game plan around Luka. And I'm sorry, but with home court advantage, I do not see the Jalen Brunsons, the Spencer Dinwiddies, or the Bertans, or anyone else on that roster outplaying the Warriors' secondary groups beyond the big three. I do not see that. And between Wiggins and Draymond, I think Luka's going to have a rude awakening here in terms of the Western Conference Finals. Here are some stats I want to show at you, Kevin, and then I would love your insights on what you're going to think about this Mavericks game, and I'll give my prediction after you give your insights. I love your prediction as well. But here's some stats just to share with you for today. This is from my Twitter account. I'll share the screen as well. A Twitter account named GW Delivery. I think they're like a fan account. Posted some postseason averages. So on the year, the Warriors averaged 114.2 points per game. Dallas was at 106.2. The Warriors out-rebounded them the regular season. 43.8 rebounds per game versus 36.9 for Dallas. The Warriors averaged over 9 assists per game at 27.8 versus 18.4 for Dallas. But the bad stat, Warriors averaged 15.3 turnovers per game, which has been their downfall, but it's nothing new. This is how they've always rolled, whereas Dallas only averaged 9.4 turnovers per game. But one other thing I want to throw out there as well, because the stat that I think matters most is how they played against each other. What shouldn't matter is the head-to-head. For the third straight series, the Warriors are going to play an opposing team who won the season series 3-1. Yeah. Same story with the Nuggets, same stories with the Grizzlies, and same stories with the availability of the Warriors roster. They were banged up. They were not fully healthy for any of them. But yet, despite that, despite losing the season series 3-1, they outscored the Mavericks in the four games collectively, 106.5 to 105. They outshot them in total field goal percentage, 48% to 44%. And Stephen Curry led those teams in scoring with just 20 per game. My point is the regular season matchups really don't matter that much. All close. The Warriors are never healthy in anyone. What are your thoughts about the Mavericks, sir?
Yeah, I mean, kudos to the Mavericks for getting to the Western Conference Finals, because as you mentioned, I did not expect it. It is one thing to game plan for Luka, and on paper it looks like, you know, all right, he's not the fastest dude or whatever, and you can game plan for him, and he takes a lot of step back threes, but he's a killer. He is an absolute killer. I mean, 32, nearly 10 rebounds a game and 7 assists per game in that series against Phoenix. And if it wasn't a just absolute curb stomping, he would have had 40-plus points last night. But he didn't. Mm-hmm. He had 35 points in three quarters. But he had as many points as the Suns did by halftime. It was Luka 27, Phoenix 27. Except Phoenix took 41 shots to get those 27 points, and Luka took 12 shots. Like, it was – what he did in the first half of Game 7 is legendary. Luka the Don. I mean, he's really good. But beyond him, Spencer Dinwiddie, I mean, 30 points on the road in a Game 7 – like,
huge.
He had like 21 at halftime. Spencer Dinwiddie's really good. Like, before he got injured, he suffered an injury when he was with the Brooklyn Nets, and then you know, obviously, like, Kyrie comes around and like James Harden comes around, so that team kind of takes a different shape, and then he did not have a great stretch with the Washington Wizards. But that trade, to, you know, when they shipped off Kristaps Porzingis for Bertans and Spencer Dinwiddie, like, that was huge. That was a really sizable turning point for the Dallas Mavericks. Like, they are not just Luka Doncic, even though sometimes a lot of possessions look like it's Luka dribbling 13 times and then it's, oh, there's three on the shot clock, I gotta take a step back three. Like, Dallas does have a lot more talent than just that. Dwight Powell has traditionally played very well against Golden State, even though he's not kind of like the banger down low that a Steven Adams or provides the rim protection that a Jaren Jackson Jr. does. He's still a very capable big. They usually look for a lob, the DP, to start games off. Dwight Powell played at Stanford. I love Dwight Powell. Great dude. just a disclaimer there. But, like,
yeah,
if their guys are hitting threes, like Dorian Finney-Smith had an 8 3-pointer game in Game 4 against Phoenix, like, Dallas can be very dangerous. Like, Maxi Kleba, 29 of 49 from three in the playoffs this year, 59%. Maxi Kleba, even in games that they're losing, he's been on a heater his entire postseason. So it is big that the Warriors do have home court advantage, even though, like, Dallas kind of eschewed that aside in game seven. But, like, you know, it's Bullock and Finney-Smith. They've each hit 35 threes, so 70 threes combined for those two. 41 of those have been in home games. I just read that stat in a Slater article. So, like, that is a significant number more of makes for home games than it is 12 more at home than on the road. So, but yeah, they have, you know, they got Luka on the floor and they spread him out with 3-point shooters, and he can make any pass there is in the book. He can bully down most of his defenders, walk them in with a crab dribble, basically to any spot he wants on the floor. So you can say you have a game plan with Luka, and you could follow that game plan, and he could still put up 35, 12, and 8.
Yeah, no doubt. And part of me wonders, and I'm curious to know what the Warriors' strategy is going to be, because I feel like there's two strategies here defensively. Either you play Luka one-on-one, let him get his 40, 50 points, but prevent anyone else from beating you, and you just, by the law of averages, you outscore them and win. Or B, you focus all out on Luka and make other people beat you. And I do think players like Draymond and Wiggins have the length. Otto Porter Jr. should be back, hopefully. And by the way, I am going to try to sneak into one of these press conferences and ask Steve Kerr, what was the play that injured Otto Porter Jr.? Like no one has any idea the when of it, the how of it. You know, there was such a shroud of mystery about him missing. I didn't even know he was going to miss game six until last minute. I'm just curious to know what the hell is going on there, because no one's figured that part out. But if Otto Porter Jr. is playing and it's expected, Kerr said that he's on track to come back for game one. I do think they have the length to battle that. Interesting, by the way, too, the four remaining teams, size is gone. It's fascinating that all of a sudden now, like, you know, your boy Powell is probably the biggest player on the Mavericks, and he's what, 6'9"?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, they do have Boban Marjanovic, but he doesn't get regular minutes.
Yeah, he doesn't come in much. You might see that. I mean, every team that plays the Warriors starts getting gimmicky and gets desperate. You might actually see that at some point. So I'll say this. I don't think the Mavericks have the defense to stop the Warriors. Luka Doncic, as amazing as he is, he is phenomenal. He's the future of this game. Defensively has a lot to learn still, and there's a lot lacking there defensively. You can get by him. I do think the Warriors will win this series in five. That is my prediction. I think, here's the weird part, I think the Warriors might lose game one. I think after that series that they just had with the Grizzlies, there might be a letdown. But if they lose game one, I'm not hitting the panic button. I still think they win this in five, maybe six. I just think the Warriors are just a vastly superior team. I look at the Mavericks 1-10, and then I look at the Grizzlies 1-10, and I'm thinking, there's an elite team. There's a team that has amazingly made the Western Conference Finals, but that should not be there at this point. That is Luka carrying this whole load. I'm thinking back to like when the playoffs started, and the Warriors were I think most Warriors fans, in terms of the order of the teams that you wanted the Warriors to play in the opening round, I think Utah was the overwhelming number one. Yeah. But I think most people wanted Dallas over Denver. Now, obviously, things have changed. I mean, Luka just gained two more rounds of experience in the process, including knocking out the Suns. That's impressive. But I just think the Warriors are just vastly superior. And I don't be surprised, Dub Nation, if they lose game one. This is just my instincts talking here. But I think the Warriors will finish this in five, maybe six. I don't see a sweep. But Warriors in five is my call. Do you have a prediction?
Yeah, so you say Warriors in 5.5, basically. I say Warriors in 6.5. I wouldn't be surprised if this goes to a game seven. I want to go back to a point you made about Luka and defense, because I agree with you. Like, too many times have I seen this postseason or in the regular season, Luka goes up, misses a shot, stares at the official for like 2 or 3 seconds with his hands up, like, what's going on, and doesn't make an attempt to get back on defense. I didn't see any of that in game seven, though. Luka was locked in defensively. Like, there was one possession, he absolutely shut down Devin Booker. I'm like, oh, Luka came to play defense today. So, like, it's in him to lock guys down. Like, you know, I was reading something like Jason Kidd challenged Luka after game two defensively, And then, like, the Mavs had a defensive rating of 104.1 over the final five games. For comparison, the Boston Celtics had the best defense in the NBA this year, and it was at, like, 106. So that would be – if you, I mean, obviously, that's a small sample size, but if you extrapolated that out, that 104.1 would be the best defense in the NBA this year. So, like, Luka has it in him to play top-notch defense. It's just not there every night. If he plays defense like he did in game seven, I could easily see this going seven. And it's not the only reason why it would go seven. If Maxi Kleber and Finney Smith and Bullock and everyone, you know, keeps on hitting threes. There's another name, Reggie Bullock. Everyone called him Bullock for like 6 years. We're talking about mispronouncing guys' names. And finally, Bullock told a crew like this year during the Phoenix series, yeah, I prefer Bullock. I think it was Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller that he told that to. I could be wrong on the broadcast crew, but so, yeah, that's why I think this could go 6.5. That's why I think it's a 6.5 game series. I do like the Warriors in this series, though, and I expect them to go to the NBA Finals. But Dallas is going to be a worthy competitor.
Yeah, I mean, they made the Western Conference Finals. That's you know, there's nothing to look past for sure. And amazing how many people were calling Devin Booker like the next Kobe. It's like, let people win championships first before you start, you know, allotting these ridiculous comparisons and so forth. It's insane. So anyways, folks, again, you can follow Kevin Dan on Twitter at Kevo408. You can follow me, Cyrus Sotzes, on Twitter at Dogsurf Roadshow, and this program on Twitter at Locked On Dubs. Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. Tomorrow's show is going to be a doozy because Bob Fitzgerald, your TV counterpart for the Golden State Warriors, is going to join me. But here's the weird part. This is going to be a special show just for the podcast crew, not for YouTube, because his contract with either the Warriors or with NBC Sports Bay Area, I don't know which one, precludes him from coming on YouTube, but he is not allowed to join me for a YouTube show. So Bob Fitzgerald and I will do an interview tomorrow morning that is going to be for the podcast audience only. And then I'm going to record a crossover show with Nick Engstad of the Locked On Mavericks. So we're going to do a little crossover production, learn more about them. They might learn more about us. Should be a good time. And Kevin, obviously, you're on with us every Monday. Mondays with Kevin. Always a delight, sir. Always have fun with you, brother. And the ride continues, man. Four teams remaining. It's a wild. This has been wild, that's for sure. And just eight more wins, Dub Nation. Eight down, eight to go. Thank you so much, everyone. Take care. Later.